I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester. His name is John Anilio, and you're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast. And John?
Yes.
I got nothing. It's, you know what? It's just, it's nothing.
People know all this stuff. Yeah. It's, you know, they don't need to hear us say the same thing over and over again. But that is Patrick Hester. He's an author.
Here I go,
because I can't help myself. It's like watching Phineas and Ferb, where they do the same bits in every episode.
I like the opening to my crazy ex-girlfriend.
Ah, that's good too.
I was actually at Hugo's with her when she had the Fuck Me Ray Bradbury.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Rachel Bloom.
Rachel Bloom. Exactly. Yeah. She was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that is Patrick. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, and follow him on Twitter at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I am a musician and a teacher and a podcaster. You can follow me on Twitter at John Anilio. Today, we are joined by Michael Livingston.
Is it Michael D?
It is. Yeah. That's not on the books, but it's on my birth certificate. Yeah.
Ah, I gotcha.
Yeah. So Michael Livingston, he's an award-winning writer and professor who holds degrees in history, medieval studies, and English, and he's the author of the Shards of Heaven series. You could check out his website, michaellivingston.com, and you can follow him on Twitter, at MedievalGuy. Michael, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Do you know James Ng?
Not really strong personally, no. We've met.
We had to make that happen, John, because medieval and Latin, I feel like, go together.
Oh yeah. You know, James, because he hasn't had he had a bunch of books out through Pyre. He must have had four or five books in that series. But I feel like I haven't seen anything new in terms of those kinds of books in the past few years. So I don't know if he's just focusing on teaching right now and if he's sort of,
I just thought
coming up with this new stuff. Yeah. James is a really interesting guy. And I really like him as an author and as a dude.
Yeah, I first came across his work in Blackgate, his short fiction.
And that's another thing, John. You know, with Blackgate, kind of reducing what they're doing. You know.
Mm. Yeah. But anyway, Michael is here. He's got two books out. The first book in the series, The Shards of Heaven, and the new one that's out now is called The Gates of Hell. And before we get to anything else, Michael, why don't you give us a little bit of give our listeners a little bit of a taste of what those books are and why they should go buy them.
Yeah, so these are historical fantasy novels set to time of ancient Rome as to Antony and Cleopatra. The first one is at that time period. The second one is the rise of Augustus Caesar. It's a bit secret history-ish. So like Tim Powers, things are built into the fabric of history as much as possible. I happen to tweak things a little bit. The Trident of Poseidon is real. The Ark of the Covenant is real. And grappling with these forces against the backdrop of the ongoing conflicts of early Rome and how they're actually shaping history as we know it.
You say they're real as if they aren't actually real.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to judge. No. I'm not going to judge.
Now, this is part of your job, in addition to being a writer, is to being a professor. So this is the kinds of things that you teach. So obviously that must have a big impact on your writing. But what are the current classes that you're teaching that are along these lines?
And how many credits do you get for them? And
so currently, actually, this semester is one of those. As professors, sometimes you got the semesters you get to do all your stuff, and then some semesters you're doing the departmental work. So
right.
I'm doing a lot of basic literature classes right now. I teach classes on Vikings. I teach classes on J.R.R. Tolkien, and medievalism, things like that, and also just in general medieval history, medieval literature of kind of any stripe.
So have you been really impressed with the accuracy of the History Channel's Viking show?
So I got mixed feelings about that. let me say for the record, the guy that plays Ragnar
is awesome.
I want to be him.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's awesome.
I forget his name. It's Travis or something.
I have no idea.
Anyway, that I want to be that guy. He probably looks nothing like the real guy, but every time I pick up a book about Ragnar Lothbrok now, that's the guy. Like, he's in there now, and he's fantastic. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, Michael has written quite a bit for tour.com about a lot of these different topics, and I definitely want to get to that when we get into the meat of the interview. But before we do that, if you enjoy these interviews with folks like Michael, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. You can back us for $1 a month, a couple bucks a month, whatever works for you, whatever value you get out of the show. We'd like to thank the many people who already back us. It makes doing this great. It makes it not have to do this out of our own pocket anymore. We actually get it cost covered. So it's great.
I just paid the hosting for the next 3 months.
Yeah. So it's great. It really helps. And thank you. It really means a lot to us. So if you dig the show, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Also, I should put this, the other ways you can help if you can't help financially is you can also tell a friend about the podcast. If you know someone who likes these kinds of books and interviews, you can write a review on iTunes.
Stars or six.
Yeah, that's a way you can help, and you don't have to spend any money. So if that works for you too, go and do that. That would help us out too. So thanks very much. And now let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And as per usual, usually our author guests always come back with, I have two. Is it okay if I share two? They can never, no author has ever come in and be like, yeah, I really couldn't think of anything. So what? And they was like, I have five. Is five okay? But anyway, so Michael, why don't you go first and you can share your two?
Well, as it happens, I actually have 22. I mean,
you're pulling a Paul Weimer.
Yes.
I love Paul.
Who doesn't?
So yeah, I mean, how can you not? No, I just had one, but then I'm on the road right now in Toronto, and that sort of brought something up to mind that I thought I'd mention for your listeners.
Are you actually using a Wacom stylus?
No, actually, that's a pen.
It looks like a Wacom. Okay.
Yeah, it's one of these things we used to have that you could write.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's a quill.
I'd show you my Wacom, but I don't have it here with me. Go ahead.
The first thing I thought I'd mention is just... I do a lot of traveling, and I do a lot of hiking, backpacking. I was born and raised in Colorado. Do a lot of, hanging up in mountains, that kind of thing. And there's a new water purifier that I wanted people to kind of have a better sense of. That's remarkable. I bought it and tried it for the first time this summer, and I'm doing it every time I travel. If I'm in a weird country, it's safer that way. Very simple, and it's called the Grail. Water purifier bottle, Grayl. And the way it functions, it's simply, it's a water bottle, but if you know how a French press works for coffee, it basically does the same thing with a filter. So, I was backpacking this summer, my brother, he's got one of the old fashioned kind of pump things with the, you put a float in the water and you're drawn in the water and you're sitting there pumping for 15, 20 minutes, and I just put this bottle in the water, French press a filter through it, and 12 seconds later, I'm just chugging water, watching the pump. Like, that's nice, buddy. Good. You keep that going, man.
That's
fantastic.
Awesome.
So it's a very simple, clever device. They started on Indiegogo or GoFundMe. I don't know. One of those things. And it's remarkable. It's fantastic. I've loved it. Really awesome if you're ever worried about water quality. Travel a lot, don't want to get sick, Montezuma's Revenge or whatever. Very, very much an awesome little gadget.
That is very cool.
Yes. Yes. Highly recommended.
And what is your other thing?
Oh, my second thing. Well, as I said, I'm on the road here in Canada. I would sing the anthem, but I don't know.
Actually, on this show, we pronounce it Canadia.
Canadia. Do you now? Canadia. The other thing is, a set of notebooks actually that I got, was introduced to here in Canada. And if you ever have to write as a writer, with an actual pen, which I try to avoid, but sometimes notes and, sketching things out, whatever, it's just easier with a pen still. And it's called, White Lines. And what it is, it's one of these things like, why didn't I think of this? it reverses, lined paper. So the lines are white, and where white paper would normally be is a very, very light gray. And it's much easier on the eyes. And as an added bonus, it comes with an app. So I can doodle all over a page, take a picture of it with my iPhone or Android, whatever it is, and the software, automatically skews the page, saves it as a PDF, and it drops out the background. So there's not, dark lines through everything.
Does it try to OCR it?
It can have that. Yeah, it can have that. So I don't do that. My handwriting is beyond the capabilities of any artificial intelligence. That is how mine. Yeah,
mine's horrible.
We're gonna know artificial intelligence works when it can read my handwriting, because I can't read it sometimes. I'll write something on the board. They're like, "What does that say?" I'm sorry, kids. I don't know what I just wrote. Does anybody know what was
in there? No. You need to turn around and go, "What? You weren't paying attention?"
Yeah, you weren't paying attention. Come on. So it's a fantastic way of preserving, the notes I'm taking on my mobile devices. So I don't always have to actually have that notebook with me, and I can see everything I wrote in it. So another really cool thing. I found it for the first time here in Canada. I order them online. It's a really great thing. If you are somebody who still writes certain things longhand, but lives a very mobile device life, which I have increasingly done.
That's awesome.
Good stuff.
That is very cool. Along the same lines, my pick this week is going to be...
Before you do that, John, I just want to throw it out there. Once you've scanned and you have the PDFs, then you can drop those PDFs into your Scrivener project file.
You certainly could, yeah. I don't actually personally use Scrivener.
We'll fix that by the end of the show.
I know. We have some opinions on that. But yeah, I can move those wherever I need. I use, drop them into Notability for whatever I need to do there. It's just tremendously flexible to have them. And because of the way it drops out the background of the lines, you're just getting your text. If you need to sketch something, a map or whatever, you don't have all those lines in the way. They just drop out.
That's awesome.
It's great.
Go ahead, John. What was your pick?
Oh, my pick this week is Instapaper, which I've picked in the past. I've used Instapaper for a million years, and it's always been a go-to app. And for people who don't know, there's another service like Pocket. It does the same idea. But basically what you do is you have your Instapaper account, and you end up getting sort of these little buttons that are in your browser or on your phone, depending on what, if you read through Apple News or if you read through Feedly or whatever else. You have the Instapaper button. So when an article, blog post, what have you, comes up that's of interest to you, you hit the Instapaper button and it sends it to your Instapaper account, which you can then read on your phone or on your laptop. And it takes out all the ads, and it's a much better reading experience. And I've used it for a very long time and I've always liked it. For a long time, Instapaper also had and I've always just used the free version, but there was Instapaper Premium, which wasn't very much. It was only like $4 a month or something. And you had additional features that were interesting to me, but not interesting enough to get me to pay the $4 a month. Well, what I got an email about a couple weeks ago that Pinterest and Instapaper have joined forces. I'm assuming Pinterest bought Instapaper. That's my guess, because Pinterest is the bigger company. But now, because of that, because Pinterest has a lot more money, all of the premium things that were Instapaper, the premium features, are now free. They just said, like, so all of your all of those features you used to have to pay $4 a month for, now they're just like, yeah, go use it, because I guess Pinterest is just using Instapaper for whatever their technology is, so they can, it's fine for them not to have to charge for it. And the biggest feature, so I would definitely, if you've been interested in Instapaper in the past and don't use it, go look at it now, because it does a lot more now. And the big thing that it does for me is send to Kindle. So I really love reading on my Kindle Paperwhite. It's because it's not the blue light of your phone. It doesn't have the glare. It's a much nicer reading experience. So now what you can do with the free version is, when you come across an article that you like, you go right to send to Kindle. So Michael had a bunch of, as I said earlier, he has a bunch of articles on tor.com. So instead of me reading them on my phone, now I sent all those articles here, and I ended up reading almost all of them, because it was a much nicer reading experience. And what's great about that too is that, with your Kindle, you can highlight, you could take notes on it, and then you can sort of email those notes to yourself. So for note taking on articles, it's great. So that to me is the killer feature on Instapaper that now you get. So that is my pick. So Instapaper, go and check it out. If you've used it in the past, like I said, there's a lot more that you can do with it. I think you can have it sort of speed read to you. There's a lot to it now. So go and check it out. Instapaper.
That's awesome. I'm one of those people who knew what it was. I didn't know it had all these extra features now. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's just been in like the past month that all those extra things are there now. So definitely worth it. Patrick.
Yes.
Do you have a pick?
Oh, I thought you were just generally saying my name. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm gonna pick the new Fire tablet that I just picked up from Alm. Mm. So this is the HD Fire 8. It's got RAM. It's got hard drive stuff. You name it. It's got all that stuff inside. But basically, I got it. As listeners know, Mom has Alzheimer's and she's been struggling a lot with reading lately. So the reason behind getting this for her was twofold. One, to get some games and apps to challenge her brain.
Mm-hmm.
And two, because she's struggling to read the written word, give her access to my Audible account. So she can listen to all my audiobooks. And she's already started like 3 different books and can't decide which one to stick with. And she's looking at all the other books going, maybe I should try one of these too. I'm trying to get her to whittle it down and just listen to one and just go forward from there. And I've also had to figure out how to turn off all the sound on fucking Candy Crush.
Yeah, but she can use headphones too, right?
Yeah, no, she does not use headphones.
Not for the games, right?
No. So that's my pick. It's the HD Fire tablet. It's super ridiculously easy. John and I actually talked about it in our Just the Two of Us episode that should be dropping in a couple of weeks on this feed. And it's super easy to use. It was set up automatically. It had all my account information. All I had to basically do was turn it on. So yeah. That was pretty sweet.
You said it's like $90 or something like that?
$90, so. Yeah. I think I got the 16 gig version of it. So.
Yeah. What a world.
Yeah.
What a world. No, exactly.
And to be honest with you, I do have Prime and it has access to all of my Prime stuff too. So if she wanted to watch, you know, Man in the High Castle, which she hated, she could, you know, watch some of the Prime programming as well.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I saw you shudder a bit with that, Michael, because I liked Man in the High Castle. I don't know if you ended up watching that. I don't know if that's something. That
I'm surprised somebody would not like it.
Mom is from that era. She does not like the idea of Nazis.
Oh, sure.
And being in America, that really, really bothered her.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was more of an emotional response to that than anything else.
Right.
She just did not like that at all. She was born, believe it or not, she was born December 7th, 1941.
Whoa. Yeah. Easy to remember.
Yeah. So for her, that was not escapism storytelling. Mm-hmm. It was horror porn.
Sure. Mm.
So yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. We just celebrated my wife's grandmother's 103rd birthday.
Oh,
which is astonishing. And so she was born in 1913. I remember a couple years ago when it was her 100th birthday and it was like a big deal. I just remember I came to the realization. I'm like, you were in your 30s during World War II. You were in your 30s already. This is insane. How is this possible? But anyway, yeah. So I don't know if she's into that. Anyway, Michael, as I've mentioned several times, Michael writes some really fun, interesting posts over at Tor.com that I kind of worked through this weekend.
So I'm assuming Tor is your publisher too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So both of Michael's books are out through Tor. What a lot of Michael's articles are about is sort of taking his area of expertise with medieval history and all of that and sort of analyzing a lot of our modern books, TV shows, movies through that lens. And a great article kind of based on what Patrick was just talking about is The Norseman the worst Viking movie ever made? And The Norseman is a movie from 1978, I believe, what you mentioned in this article.
What about, oh God bless America, The Immortal. That was a horrible Viking movie.
Was that even a Viking movie?
I think
that
it was. Yeah, like he was. It was. Yeah.
No, but this one is a 78 movie starring Lee Majors, the $6 million man.
Yeah, exactly, and his porn stash. Oh God, it's great. Yeah. Yeah. And he's. he doesn't even try to mess with his like hillbilly drawl. he doesn't even try. So he's like, you know, we're Norsemen. Like, what?
I'm not
like,
the
what
kind
is going on?
To kiss and tell.
Fall Guy, man.
Seen with Pharaoh. It's true. I hire my body out to play. Hey.
Yeah.
Patrick, I watched. About.
I don't get any credit for pulling that song out of my
ass. Should you get credit for that? Yes. Or?
Patrick, I'm going to give you credit for that. I watched about.
I'm frightened.
Yeah, I watched about 4 minutes of an episode of The Fall Guy a couple months ago because I think I think that's up on Hulu.
Oh, no.
And it just kind of came up in my Hulu feed. And I'm like, I remember loving the show as a kid. I'm sure this is unwatchable now, but I got to try a little bit of it. And I had the theme song and the intro. I'm like, oh, this is great. About 4 minutes into the show, I'm like, yeah, this is unwatchable. No. But it does sort of take you back to that place and time.
He was one of those guys that the stunt people loved him. So the stunt people loved Lee Majors and they loved Burt Reynolds because
Hooper, man.
they as actors, these guys like went out of their way to respect and adore the stunt people on their movies and TV shows and stuff. So they loved them. So that whole show was him like writing a love letter to the stunt people, but it was a bad show.
Yeah, well. This article is great because it's couched in that you and your friend were sort of playing a drinking game where you took a drink anytime something was historically inaccurate and you had to stop that.
within like minutes of the opening alone, it has some of these, you know, kind of Star Wars-esque title scrolls, right? And the opening alone, which is, it must be like 4 or 5 sentences. It's not long. Uh-huh. I mean, it was like, pause, drink. You gotta stop, man. It's gonna end in the hospital. It's really astonishing. There is effectively nothing historical about the film. And even beyond that, I mean, I can sometimes set that aside, right? But it's a horrible film. Just viscerally bad. But it is also, some films can be so horrific. It's fun. I mean, the kind of MST3K kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this is in that category.
Well, one of the things you brought up, which seemed to be really indicative of the times, is that there are not one, but 2 football players that are in it. It's Deacon Jones and Blitnikoff.
Fred Blitnikoff, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that just seemed to be a thing at the time. They were just like, we got to get football players into acting. Yeah. Fred Dreyer, you want a show on NBC? Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
What was that with the time? Well, I guess I don't know. Just football players were—they don't really do that. Just, well, I mean,
we need a football player for this movie. Only Dick Butkus is available. yeah, go for it. Like, why not?
Go for it.
He can play. He can play a king in England, right?
Yeah. Oh my God! And of course, in the Norsemen, the Deacon Jones is a very formidable black guy, and he's playing a Viking. Which is, and they try and plot it in. They're like, oh, he came from a Viking raid in sub-Saharan Africa, and Buddy and I are looking at you like, there were no Vikings. What? And then they named him, his character name is Thrall, which actually is Old Norse for slave. And he gets one line in the film, and he's actually carrying an old dead white guy, and he's talking about like the honoring Scandinavian gods, and we were just like, mortified. This is incredible. It's racist. Like, and then amping it up, you know, to 11 or something. Oh my God. I don't know how people kept a straight face at all.
A more modern movie, which you did like for what it was, is, and I know Patrick, I think, enjoyed this movie because he was a big player of the game, and that is the Warcraft movie. Now, Patrick, I don't know if you ended up liking the movie too.
I'm sorry, John, I need to interrupt you to say Father Hollard.
Okay, yes, because I know you're a big player of the game. Michael, give us some of your thoughts on the Warcraft movie, because you had a different opinion about that.
I did. I enjoyed it. I mean, obviously, it's not trying to be historical in any way. I tried to make that point in my review, you know, that I was approaching this as a medievalist, looking at it through a medieval kind of lens, because this is a movie that grows out of medieval things, ultimately. But it's not, you know, intended to be medieval. But the fact that it took itself so not seriously made it so much easier to accept the fact that, you know, nobody wears a helmet and, you know, like everybody's in plate mail. Like the metallurgy is fantastic. You know, it just, it had fun with it.
Isn't that Lothgar?
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same guy.
Yeah. It's the actor. Travis,
whatever his name is. Yeah. So yeah, same guy. And he plays the same character.
Essentially. Just,
that's who he is. Yeah, it was fun. I was kind of, as I was watching it, I was getting kind of nervous. And then they had a scene where they have to go up into the high tower, of course, to see the great mage.
Yeah.
And of course he lives at the highest tower because why wouldn't you in a time with no elevators? And they show these guys just exhausted climbing the stairs. And I was like, all right, checkmate, you know, like you got me. That's fantastic. And of course it's great if you do know the Warcraft mythos.
Yeah.
They do, I think, a really good job of encapsulating as much of that as you can within a Hollywood film. I thought it was impressive.
One of my friends that I went and saw that with has actually read a lot of the books, the novelizations.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that followed one of the novelizations pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they intended to like make that book into the movie or what, but like a lot of the stuff in the movie was based on that book.
Yeah. Well, they did a really good job. I mean, I thought for what they were trying to do,
I remember the first time I had to run up a mage tower in Stormwind and I felt winded. Trust me, because it's like circle, 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 right. Circle, circle, and you just keep running up and up and up. Finally, you just put it on auto run and go.
Yeah.
Anytime you want to get up to the top of this damn tower, go for it. So here's my question. Here's where we draw the line in the sand between us, Michael.
Yeah.
The 13th Warrior.
Uh-huh. Loved it.
Oh, good. Good. Okay, we can be friends.
Loved it. Yeah, yes. In fact, these tour.com things, they asked me to just write a column kind of like, you know, whenever I was into it.
Sure.
And one of my forthcoming ones is actually about my favorite retellings of Beowulf and, you know, movie versions of Beowulf, and 13th Warrior is my number one.
It's a great
movie. It is my favorite Beowulf retelling there is.
There's a masquerade every year at Mile High Con, which is essentially the costume contest. And, a couple of years ago, one of the judges was wearing armor that she had handmade. And it was the really big guy that didn't talk much from the movie.
Right.
It was his armor. I looked at it and I'm going, that looks so familiar. Where do I know that from?
I know that from somewhere.
And I finally had to ask her. She was one of the judges. And she's like, oh, this is from the 13th Warrior. And she named the character's name. I'm like, holy shit, that is.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
And that guy's armor is actually, if I'm remembering it right in my head, semi-right. One of the other guys is wearing.
Do I see my father? There do I see my mother?
Yeah, I can watch that.
One of the guys is wearing 15th century Spanish armor, which is, you know, like 1,000 years off. But whatever. it's such a fun movie though, and Antonio de Banderas, is fantastic as Ibn Fadlan.
My mother was a pure.
Oh God, his delivery is so fantastic, and it's fun that you know, the Crichton novel that it's based on, Michael Crichton novel, was a good novel. It was a fun novel,
and was a challenge from a friend of his to retell Beowulf, just like you said.
Yeah, yeah.
Someone basically said, write a new version of Beowulf. Go for it.
Yeah, and the way he combines it with a historical thing, the travelogue of Ibn Fadlan, he does an amazing job of sort of gently moving from the thing we know into this utterly bizarre thing about Neolithic cave people and stuff. It's great. Really great.
And
the director is great.
I can't wait for your article to come out now so I can shove it down the throats of some of the SF Signaler regulars who have given me shit for the last 7 or 8 years about my love of that movie.
My friends, you're on the right side of history.
Yeah, you can just be like, see? He's a professor.
Yeah.
He has got degrees, and he agrees with me.
That's, so there. You know, from the mouth of medieval guys.
There you go. Gospel, yes. You know?
And, you know, and one of the things you wrote quite a bit about is George R. R. Martin and his Song of Ice and Fire. And I really like it, you know, because obviously that has a lot of medieval trappings. And what's so funny about that, because that is, you know, there is the whole delegation of folks like me who read the books first, and then, you know, obviously the HBO show became so popular. And so there's a lot of people that I know they know what doesn't take place on Earth, but I think they really do forget that it's,
you've seen the maps of Britain and Ireland and Scotland that are basically Westeros.
Yeah. They're trying to overlay.
Facebook. They're like what people think Britain really looks like. And it's a Westeros map.
Yeah.
That was when I watched the most recent season of Game of Thrones, and I watched it on HBO Now. And I would actually watch the, I believe it was called After the Thrones, which was the after show where they would sort of break down the episode, which was great. I really loved watching that because it really made not only the show, but kind of the books come alive again to me, because they would have a map up there and they would be like, let's take it over to where Tyrion is on the other. And it was really very interesting and funny. The guys that hosted that were great too. But talk a little bit about, how it does have kind of medieval roots and how it is, you know, it's what it is, but there is a lot of accuracy there as well.
There's a phenomenal amount of accuracy. I mean, you know, George R. R. Martin, as I've talked about in other venues, Game of Thrones is like the greatest hits of the Middle Ages into the early modern period. And he has deeply researched it all. Obviously, it's based on the War of the Roses, on a really kind of, you know, that's like the skeleton, if you will, is War of the Roses. But he's all the muscles and sinew and tissue he's put on top of this. Are from all over the place, and the way he welds it all together, I mean, I think is astonishing and brilliant. And I do think the HBO job they've done a great job in putting together the feel of the books into something that's more palatable to a general audience. So I think they really are separate entities, the books and the series, but they have that common core. Of what makes these books good, and it is the historical, you know, bones in it.
As a writer and a professor and a reader, what do you think of the fact that the show is going to end before the books?
It worries me. It worries me a little bit. It's not something you ever want to see. And you know, when they first started it worried me because George is not a fast writer. And Hollywood moves at its own ticking clock. So a little bit concerning that's going to happen. But, you know, we'll see. It's going to be an interesting phenomenon from a scholarly point of view. You know, usually you're dealing with things in the reverse about how a book affects the movie. Now we're going to have a series that started that way. And we're going to start having to ask questions when the next book comes out. Well, how did the TV show affect George's George's writing, and on an intellectual level, I suppose that's kind of fascinating.
You know, Jeff Lindsay is the author of Dexter.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, he never watched the show. He didn't really get into the show much.
Really?
And so the show never influenced the books, according to him. And so the books have a very different ending than what the TV show had. But what was very interesting, I got to interview him and talk to him. Fans of the show and the books were very angry at the end of the show of Dexter and essentially blamed him, to which he had to say,
I didn't do it.
In a very Southern way. Well, y'all understand that I don't have anything to do with that.
Yeah.
You know, and they don't. They don't get that. George has way more influence on the show than Jeff did on Dexter.
Yeah, I know George does have something to do with that.
Well, he's brought the actors to Worldcon for the Hugo Awards several years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's it's a little bit different for him because he does have I think he does have a producing credit on the show too.
He does,
yeah. So
and he's directed some episodes.
Okay, yeah. So that's cool. So definitely good. All right. So unfortunately, we are out of time. So if you like all this kind of stuff that we were talking about with Michael, and if you like what Michael thinks, I think it's pretty clear that you got to go check out his books. So again, there are two books in the series. It is The Shards of Heaven and The Gates of Hell. They are both out through Tor right now. And you know, you can get them as a hardcover. And I believe the first book is out in paperback now too, Michael?
Shards is out on paperback. Yeah, Gates is going to be out in hardback. And the third novel I turned in a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. That'll be Realms of God. That'll be out in hardback a year from now.
Do you ever go to conventions like Worldcon, Dragon Con, World Fantasy?
I went to Dragon Con for the first time this year. I go to Jordan Con very regularly. It's very close to Charleston, easy to get to. And that's pretty much been it. I was at the Nebula Awards giving some lectures on medieval things and stuff this past year, but I've not gotten into the con thing yet.
I'm totally thinking that we should do go to Worldcon and do a MSTK 3000 sort of movie thing. I would totally go to that. I would totally help you. We should do that.
I would love to do it. I would love to do it.
Well, it seems like a plan. And a lot of our listeners are big audiobook fans too. Are there audiobook versions of the first two books?
Shards of Heaven is out on audiobook. It's read by a British guy, so it's like totally legit, you know?
Absolutely.
And I assume Gates is coming out in audio. I've not seen that or heard that yet.
Gates McFadden is coming out on audio?
Gates fell. That's what he's
saying. Oh,
yeah. You're killing me, Smalls.
Yeah. All right. So, and you can check out Michael's website, michaellivingston.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at MedievalGuy, and do what I did and go to tor.com and search for Michael Livingston, and you'll find like 10 really cool articles of like what we just talked about. So that is some good reading there too. So go and check that out as well. And we talked about the cons and everything else. And Michael, anything else you want to let our listeners know before we have to wrap it up here?
I think that's just about it. I do have a prequel short story that came out it's in the same venue of Shards. It's about Alexander the Great and some of these same things. That came out a couple weeks ago. I think
awesome.
It was on that's the Tor Forge blog. Mm-hmm. That came out on, but I'm also going to be releasing an ebook of it. So there's another
excellent.
One.
Excellent. Very good. For us, once again, if you dig the show, dig these conversations with people like Michael, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, anything you want to mention to people before we wrap it up here?
Watch The 13th Warrior.
Yes. Well, I think that's been really what this whole episode has been about.
Yeah, I have two DVD copies of that because I lost one for a little while, and so I ordered another one. And as soon as I got the other one and started watching it, I was like cleaning out my basement, and I found the first one. I was like, there it is. Oh.
Well, now you can have one for upstairs and one for downstairs.
Exactly. I need a third one because I have a basement, a ground floor, and then a upstairs. So, yeah.
I think that goes without saying.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
And then, like, giant posters of Antonio Banderas. You don't think that would be weird?
I have my Zorro poster. Yes, exactly. My Zorro poster.
Who has an uncredited role in that movie? Actress, a big time actress.
In Zorro?
No, in The 13th Warrior.
I don't know.
The old witch woman.
I you're not going to get watched that movie when it was in the theaters.
She's very, very well known. She's like a big time actress in the 60s and 70s.
Okay.
And she had an uncredited role in that film.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Go back and watch that movie. Watch that scene and you will recognize her.
Okay.
Totally blanking on her name right now, but trust me.
Okay, I will do it. I will do it. All right, everybody, have a great week, and we will see you next time.
Thank you.
Gunsmoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.